welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, delivering programs from radio's yesteryear. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Quiz shows in this hour. Later on, we hear Groucho Marx host You Bet Your Life. But right now, it's Information Please from February 20th, 1942 on the NBC Blue Network, featuring two popular motion picture stars, John Carradine and Boris Karloff. Clifton Fadiman is the moderator.
It's 8:30.
It's 8:30 New York time. Time to wake up America and stump the experts. Each week at this time, Lucky Strike offers you a panel of four experts, an MC, and a lot of questions and answers. You furnish the questions and our experts try to answer them. For every question used, Lucky Strike will reward you with $10 in defense stamps. If the question is muffed, you get a total of a $50 defense bond plus the 24-volume set of the Encyclopedia Britannica. Send your questions to Information Please, 480 Lexington Avenue, New York City. If our editorial staff edits your questions a bit, don't fret over it. In case of similarity, we'll have to be sole judge of who shall be paid, and all questions become the property of Information Please. I present our Master of Ceremonies, book reviewer of the New Yorker magazine, Clifton Fadiman. Mr. Fadiman.
Ladies and gentlemen, tonight, as ever, Information Please proceeds in its spontaneous and happy-go-lucky manner. Our board of authorities includes two of our regulars, Franklin P. Adams and John Kieran, plus a couple of ghouls who at the present moment are trying hard to hypnotize your Master of Ceremonies, possibly with some success. They are first John Carradine, one of Hollywood's very best menaces, and Boris Karloff, the veteran bogeyman of the films and now number one blood curdler in Arsenic and Old Lace. And by the way, Mr. Karloff, since we have had to announce that you were scared to appear on Friday the 13th last week, you're curdling much less blood in this country than you were before. You realize that your reputation is practically zero at the moment.
I made a mistake, Mr. Fadiman.
You mean you should have appeared?
I meant the 20th.
Oh, you're scared? Now see if we can make that come true, Mr. Karloff. Suppose we start with a question from Paul Rosenbluth of New York City. In deference to our monstrous guests this evening, we start off with a question about victims of one sort or another. You're going to get 2 out of 3 on this if we can. I want you to identify for us a victim of treachery, in fact or in fiction, who, in this first case, was shot in the back of the head. The victim of treachery who was shot in the back of the head. Mr. Karloff?
I think that would be Jesse James.
It was Jesse James. Who shot him, Mr. Carradine?
I did.
Yes. We've never had it more pleasantly explained. What was your fictional name in the play, Mr. Carradine?
Bob Ford.
Robert Ford, yes.
A dirty little coward.
That's
Mr.
Howard.
Maybe Jesse James in his grave.
Yes, we want to have as much friendly badinage, Mr. Adams, as we can on this program. Also, Carradine is a darn sight bigger than you are. Mr. Karloff, have you, in the course of your grim career, ever done any backstabbing? I don't mean on this program.
Never.
You never have?
Never.
Much more virtuous than you are, Mr. Carradine. How about this one? A victim of treachery who was killed by a treacherous letting of blood. His blood was let. Mr. Carradine.
No, I beg your pardon. No.
That isn't in your biography, eh? Mr. Karloff, doesn't it appeal to you?
Yes, it does. I wish I'd thought of it.
Well, this is the famous story of Robin Hood. Remember when Robin Hood was ill at the end of the book? He was put in the care of a prioress who was really his enemy, and she slit his veins and just let him bleed quietly to death, a very affecting death. That was the death of Robin Hood. Not a bad notion, eh, Mr. Karloff?
Fine.
Yeah. Now, in this case, the victim was killed with a poisoned rapier. Killed with a poisoned rapier. Mr. Kieran.
Well, that was Hamlet and Laertes, both.
Hamlet and Laertes, both of them killed with a poisoned rapier. Very good. Mr. Carradine, you were going to say the same thing, I have no doubt. That gives us 2 victims out of 3. How about this one from Irwin Fisher of Baltimore? We ended with a Shakespearean reference. Let's start with another. Now, I'm going to give you situations from 3 Shakespearean plays. You are to quote from the famous speech made in each case. I'll explain each case. Now, this is Act 3, Scene 4 of Hamlet. Hamlet is showing his mother the picture of 2 kings, and he's comparing them. What does he say? Mr. Carradine.
See what a grace was seated on this brow.
Yes.
My Pyrian's curl, the front of Jove himself.
That's very good.
I like Mars to threaten and command.
Very, very good. Amazing repertory, Mr. Carradine. Hope Hollywood's listening in. What were you going to say, Mr. Adams?
Same thing.
Same thing, yes.
Less well.
Mr. Kieran.
I can go on from there for a couple of lines.
All right.
A station like the Herald Mercury, new lighted on a heaven-kissing hill. Is that all right?
A dandy. How's that, Mr. Carradine?
Oh, it's fine. Okay. A combination of the form, indeed, wherever he got it. Shall we just go on with the play?
Yeah, we'd better get off Shakespeare sooner or later. How about Othello? In this case, Iago is discussing Cassio's character with Othello, and he hesitates at besmirching Cassio's name. Do you remember that? What does he say? This is in Act 3, Scene 3. Mr. Kieran.
Who steals my purse steals trash?
That's the famous speech, yes. Very good. How does it begin? There are a couple of lines before that. Remember it, Mr. Carradine? I thought you had your hand up there. Good name?
Good name of man or woman, dear my lord, is the immediate jewel of their souls. Who steals my purse steals trash.
I would like to explain to the listening audience that Mr. Carradine is not reading from a book. The next one from Act 2, Scene 1 of Macbeth. Now here Macbeth has just dismissed his servant. And he waits for the bell as a signal for his foul deed. Mr. Carradine had his hand up at once.
He says to the servant, "Go bid thy mistress. When my drink is ready, she strike upon the bell. Get you to bed."
Yeah, I don't want. I don't want the whole scene.
After the scene, he says, "Is this a dagger which I see before me, the handle toward my hand?"
Come, let me clutch thee.
I have thee not.
Yet I see thee still.
Thank you, gentlemen. Mr. Adams,
I know my cues.
You certainly do. How about this one from W.H. Boggs of St. Louis, Missouri? Under what circumstances, again, either in fact or fiction, were these remarkable deeds performed? Yet 3 out of 4. Now, this first deed, in this first deed, 7 were killed with one blow. Under what circumstances? Mr. Adams.
I think that's in the Grimm's fairy tales.
The Brothers Grimm?
The Brothers Grimm.
Like Carradine and
Karloff? A tailor.
Yeah, it's a tailor.
Flies.
Yeah, flies. He made everybody believe they were men. Mr. Karloff, were you going to add
I was about to say that.
Going to say that, yes.
In fact, that was the name of the story, Seven at a Blow.
Yes, that's right, Mr. Carradine. Still here? We've left Shakespeare, you know, Mr. Carradine. How about the one who killed 40 in a row? What are the circumstances under which that wholesale assassination was committed, Mr. Karloff?
I think that was Ali Baba and the 40 thieves when they were all in jugs.
In jugs, yes. And who did the killing?
Somebody's girlfriend, if I remember rightly.
Well, I don't know. Don't pull a Winchell on us. Mr. Carradine?
Well, I can't remember her name, but she was the servant to Aladdin's brother.
Servant of Ali
Baba. Upon the death of his brother in the cave.
Yes, servant of Ali Baba. Was it Morgiana? Was that the name? Yes. How did she do the trick, Mr. Karloff? Did you say that? Perhaps I wasn't listening.
No, I didn't.
How did she do the killing, Mr. Carradine?
Poured hot oil on them as they were waiting in the jars to get out and surprise Aladdin in the middle of the night.
Yes, yes. I wish I could reproduce Mr. Karloff's grin. Very good. Now we have someone who killed 25 Germans single-handed and captured 132. We have three hands on that. Mr. Kieran.
Well, that was Sergeant York.
Sergeant York and the famous Argonne. In 1918. How about someone who killed 116 Japs single-handed, to bring this thing perhaps a little more up to date? Killed 116 Japs single-handed. Does that come back to you, gentlemen? Well, it's a famous story that's appeared only recently. I think I'll have to give it to you.
Well, wait a minute.
Mr. Kieran?
I've forgotten what Tom Trapnell knows. He blew up bridges of Bulkley, decorated for work out there.
Well, you've named some of our heroes, but you haven't
Kelly
named this
was
one.
A third one.
Shall I give it to you, Mr. Kieran?
You'll have to, I guess.
Captain Arthur W. Wermuth of the 57th Filipino Scout Regiment is responsible for the death of 116 Japs on Bataan Peninsula during the fighting going on there and is probably still at it, we hope. Well, that gives us 3 out of 4, I think. How about this, gentlemen, from Mrs. Catherine Stroop of Boston? This is naturally coming from Boston, a much more cultural question. Get 2 out of 3 if you can. Can you quote the line in which each of these repeated words occurs? Give us the whole line. Keeping time, 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 Mr. Adams.
In a sort of runic rhyme.
Good enough. It's from what poem?
The Bells.
From The Bells. Poe. Can you give us a couple of more lines after that? Keeping time, time, time.
In a sort of runic rhyme to the tintinabulation that so musically swells, and so forth, I am no boy to tell a whole play.
Ah, yes. You'll find, Mr. Carradine, that Adams is pretty subtle on this point.
Take note of bitterness anywhere.
All right, here's another set of repeated words. Riding, riding, riding. Mr. Curran.
The highwayman came riding, riding, riding over the purple moor, I guess.
Yes, came riding under several different circumstances up to the old inn door. Mr. Carradine, that came back to you, too?
Go on. He had a bunch of lace at his throat and a white cocked hat in his head.
What do you think of that, Mr. Adams? He's tough. Now, here's a hard one. Those two were easy. Come, come. That's all I'm going to give you. Give me the whole line. Come, come. That's a tough one, Mr.
Well,
Carradine.
That's a lyric from a song by Victor Herbert.
Sure.
I know.
How does it go?
Come, come.
I love you only.
My heart is true. I want you only. I long for you.
Well, at least you're not singing it. That's something in your favor.
You don't know.
That's very good. From the Chocolate Soldier. And there's a Shakespearean tag beginning with come, come, too. Mr. Carradine, this may be the only line you don't remember from Shakespeare. Mr. Kieran, does it come back to you? It's from Hamlet. The Queen says, come, come, you answer with an idle tongue.
Go, go, you question with a wicked tongue.
Thank you very much, Mr. Carradine. Give him an inch and he takes a mile. How about this one from Mrs. J.A. Potrickin of Alston, Massachusetts? By the way, you gentlemen have not been stumped yet, and it irks me. Who, in fact or fiction, was the famous child or family of these couples whose first names I'll give you? Get 3 out of 4. Jolyon, J-O-L-Y-N, J-O-L-Y-O-N, Jolyon and Anne. Famous child or family of that couple. Mr. Karloff.
Soames Forsyte.
Well, you have the right family. You've got the wrong man, I think. Soames was the grandchild of them, I think. What was the Forsyte family?
It'd be young Jolyon Forsyte.
Yes, but the progeny of Jolyon and Anne were 8 in number, I believe, and they were Jolyon, Swithin, Timothy, Nicholas, Roger, Esther, Anne, and Hester. I guess that makes 9. And they were the famous Forsyte family, the older generation. How about Elzear and Oliva? E-L-Z-I-R-E and Oliva, O-L-I-V-A. I may be mispronouncing those names. I hope not. Does anyone know the famous family produced by that couple? Gentlemen, they are the parents of the...
Oh, yes, Dion.
Very good, Mr. Kieran. Yes, Dion Quintuplet. They also are the father and mother of a number of other children who, I believe...
About 19.
Well, more or less. less known to fame. Now, how about Henry and Anne? Famous child or family, Henry and Anne. Produced, gentlemen, Mr. Carradine.
I'll take a little guess. Couldn't be Edward VI, could it?
No.
Son of Henry and Anne?
Queen Elizabeth.
Queen Elizabeth, yes. Have to mark that wrong, though. Mr. Adams had it right, but a little too late. Queen Elizabeth, Henry VIII, of course, and Anne Bullen. Now the famous child of Mrs. Jumbo. Mrs. Jumbo? Mr. Adams?
Jumbo.
Yes. By the way, Mr. Adams, where is Mr. Jumbo in this? I have no Mr. Jumbo listed on my card. Do you have any information as to Mr. Jumbo?
I have, but not on this program.
Very well. the next one from Anna Harrison Nelson of Kansas City, Missouri. Want you to name for me, if you can, gentlemen, 3 things which can be approached but never reached, as an example. An echo, I suppose, might be put under that listing. Something that can be approached but never reached. You may use your fancy on this, Mr. Adams.
0 and infinity.
Well, you can reach 0, can't you?
You can reach 0. Infinity is, for example, the place where parallel lines meet.
Yes. I suppose that would be true. Infinity is something you can approach but never meet. How about another, Mr. Carlock?
You approach 0... as a limit, if you keep on dividing an integer and keep on dividing...
And keep on dividing. Yes, that's right.
But you will never approach 0.
That's true. You will approach it, but you will never reach it. Well, let's generalize by saying any mathematical limit.
The theory of limits.
Isn't that called absolute 0 that you can't approach? And that's the correct name?
I think it is.
Just plain 0.
Carradine. Very good. We'll take absolute 0. Mr. Karloff. Do you have another one?
I was wondering if he had in mind Miss Garbo.
Well, it's very possible that Miss Garbo is not the only one that Mr. Adams can approach but never reach. I'll take Miss Garbo, Mr.
Thank
Carla.
You. If you can get her.
Mr. Kieran, did you have a congregation
in your
brow?
Sunset and Dawn.
Sunset, that's very poetical.
How do you mean that exactly?
Well, you can approach sunset or you go toward it.
Walking toward it?
You can't ever get
I suppose
to
that's
it.
True.
Same for dawn.
Mr. Carradine?
The end of a rainbow.
Oh, yes.
Pot of gold.
Yes, pot of gold. Sure. End of a rainbow.
The horizon.
Mr. Karloff, what were you saying?
I was going to suggest the extreme bottom of a live volcano.
What a nice idea, yes. Extreme bottom of a live volcano. Well, that gives us a half a dozen things that can be approached but never reached. So far, Lucky Strike has paid out no $50 defense bonds, and that means no sets of the Encyclopedia Britannica. And now we'll go on with a question from Kathleen Joyce of Detroit. This is about ants, A-U-N-T-S, famous ants of literature. I want you to name an ant who married an ant. An ant who married an ant. Mr. Kieran.
Charlie's aunt.
Yes, that's right. Charlie's aunt did marry an aunt. I think only in the moving picture version, though, in the play version.
I don't remember it in the play, but...
Did you see Mr. J. Benny?
Yes, I did.
In the movie version, well, there, he who plays Lord Pancrat Baberly does marry his Spanish, the Spanish aunt, doesn't he? That's quite right. How about an aunt who was also her nephew's mother? I believe that's perfectly clear. An aunt who was also her nephew's mother. A little bit mixed up, I know. Any idea?
I mean, it was his real mother, not acting as his mother.
She wasn't his aunt. She was just an aunt, wasn't she?
She was an aunt of his. Not just an aunt generally, but his own aunt. In other words, the nephew's aunt was also his mother. I'll make it clearer. I'll say the nephew's mother was also his aunt, Mr. Adams. Now, does it come to you?
Nope.
It's, Mr. Kieran?
Is that in David Copperfield?
No, I don't know how to make that up. Well, now, come. It's Gertrude in Hamlet. Isn't his aunt also
his
mother?
That's right.
She marries his uncle and therefore becomes his aunt.
Well, and she's also his stepmother.
Yes, she's also a stepmother. She gets three salaries, which is contrary to equity ruling. That's right. Well, I have to count that wrong, gentlemen.
Well, she's not really his aunt.
Oh, yes.
No.
Yes, and when he gets tired of calling her mother, he can call her aunt.
Aunt is one's father's sister.
Not necessarily.
Sue Shakespeare.
Oh. And let's know how you make out, Mr. Carradine. How about an aunt who announced she was in town? An aunt who announced she was in town, Mr. Adams.
Aunt Jemima.
And no less, yes. What was Aunt Jemima's slogan?
Eyes in town, honey.
That's very good. Yes. Well, that gives us two aunts out of three. Now, how about this? This is from Richard Kelly of New York City. It's about famous slaves. Who is the famous slave of each of these masters? Prospero had a slave, Mr. Carradine.
Caliban.
I had three or four hands up on that. I guess we all knew it. Agamemnon had a famous slave. Agamemnon. Ah, not so many hands this time. Mr. Kieran.
Briseis?
No, I think you're thinking of... Briseis was the slave of... What's his name?
Roman Cressida?
No.
Well, no. I give up. Oh, wait a minute. No,
have
go
to
on with
wrong.
The show.
Cassandra. Cassandra was given to Agamemnon as a slave. Remember that?
Wasn't she the daughter of one of the kings?
She was the daughter of one of the daughters of Priam. Who wasn't in those days. She had 50. Pardon, Mr. Carradine?
Yeah, she became a little more than a slave to him.
Oh, yes. Yes, she did become a little more. But she worked her way up, Mr. Carradine. She began as a slave.
Mr. C is kind of plain spoken.
How about a famous slave of Augustine Sinclair? Mr. Adams.
Uncle Tom.
Uncle Tom, yes, very good. Mr. Kieran had his hand up, too, on that. Well, we got two slaves out of three. Now, how about this from Mrs. L.A. Sander of St. Paul, Minnesota? Get three out of four. It's all about spiders. No doubt favorite pets of Mr. Karloff and Mr. Carradine here. Can you identify the spider who tried to be companionable? Well, that's Mr. Karloff.
The spider with Bruce.
Oh, nothing companionable
King Bruce
about...
of Scotland?
Nothing companionable about that spider, I shouldn't think.
Well, he used to let himself down on a thread to visit him, and that sort of encouraged Bruce to try to escape.
Yes, Mr. Adams?
The spider attempted to be companionable with the celebrated fly.
Oh, I think you've all got the wrong spiders, to my mind.
He asked him to walk into his parlor, and nothing is more companionable than that.
Now, Mr. Adams and Mr. Karloff, you are going to mess up this question between you in a way which is going to drive me nuts. Mr. Carradine?
Why, the Spider, who got very companionable and sat down beside Miss Muffet.
Yes, you are aware of Miss Muffet, Mr. Adams. That was the one, the spider, who sat down beside Miss Muffet. Mr. Carradine, will you please answer all the rest of these? Now, identify the spider that persevered and saved a nation. Mr. Karloff?
That's my chap with Bruce.
Yes, that's right. Now you're all right, Mr. Karloff. That's right. What was the story, Mr. Karloff? Remember it?
The spider used to let himself down, and the thread would break, and so he'd try again and try again and try again, and that gave Bruce the idea of trying again.
Yes, that's right. And he was successful in doing what? What was Bruce's aim?
He freed Scotland from England.
Yes, had a good stab at after the seventh time, the seventh try.
Yep.
Now a spider, gentlemen, that tried to be hospitable. Mr. Adams?
That's my friend.
A friend for each of you boys on the program this evening, yes. That's the one who walked into my parlor. Will you walk into my parlor so the spider to the fly? Who wrote that?
Anon.
I have no idea. Remember,
Anon.
Was it our old friend Anon? I'm not sure. Now,
I
who was called?
So. I think it was
a real person.
Actually authored by somebody.
I think it
whose
was.
Whose name
too,
escapes me.
Escapes me, too. A double escape. How about this one? Who was called a bottled spider and a bunch-backed toad? Have two hands. Mr. Kieran?
Richard III.
Richard III. Very good. Who called him that?
Well, I'll give that to Mr. Carradine.
Mr. Carradine?
Margaret called him that.
How many lines do you want to give us, Mr. Carradine?
I'll let it go at that.
All right. That gives us three spiders out of four. By gollies. We've got all our answers in the first part of that question. Here's one from P. Joseph LaManna of Brooklyn, New York. And, gentlemen, if you don't mind, I should like to lose a $50 defense bond before this evening is over. Here are some questions on hanging, gentlemen, just to introduce a note of cheer into what shall, quote, neither night nor day hang upon his penthouse lid? Close quote. Question mark. Mr. Kieran.
Sleep.
Very good, Mr. Kieran. That's not a very well-known quotation. What's it from?
That's what I'm trying to think of right away.
Macbeth.
That's
what witches say.
Very good. Want to say any more, Mr. Kieran?
No.
All right.
I'm not a witch tonight.
How about this? What is hanging breathless on thy fate? Mr. Adams.
Union.
No, it's another abstraction.
It's a ship of state.
That's the reference. But what is doing the actual hanging? Mr. Carradine.
Humanity. With all its fears, with all its hopes of future years.
Yes.
Is hanging breathless on thy fate.
Yes, that's very good. Mr. Carradine, what's the name of the poem that you're quoting?
Mr.
The ship of state, I believe.
No, that's we sort of
the
think
ship.
Of it as that. The building of a
the
ship.
The building of the ship.
Yes. That's right.
By build me time. Straight, O worthy master. You want any more of that?
Yes.
And gentlemen, finally, who hung by his nose up above? Who hung by his nose up above, Mr. Kieran?
The man on the flying trapeze.
Very good. That's right.
I thought he hung by his knees.
No, he hung
by his nose.
Hung by his nose.
Anybody could hang by his knees.
The greatest of knees, you're thinking.
That's three hangings out of three. A little jocular this evening, Mr. Adams, huh? How about this
Nothing
one?
Nothing for me.
How about Albert Morland? Morland's question. This comes from Montreal, Canada. Identify these kings of fact or fiction. Now, the first was a ship's captain who was called King Tom. King Tom, a ship's captain. Mr. Karloff, was that your hand going
yes,
up in that ghostly way?
Yes. From the outcast of the island.
Would you stop snapping those bones of yours, Mr. Karloff? Beg pardon.
His name was Lingard.
Very good. Who was Captain Tom Lingard?
He's in The Outcast of the Islands by Conrad and in Almar's Folly by Conrad.
Is he in The Rescue, too?
And in The Rescue.
And in The Rescue.
But years later.
Yes, very good. That only a omnivorous Conrad fan, I think, would get. Mr. Carradine, would you care to quote one of the novels of Conrad for us? How about the king who owed his throne to a girl? Owed his throne to the efforts of a girl. Mr. Karloff.
King Charles of France owed his throne...
To whom?
To Joan of Arc.
Yes, to Joan of Arc. Very good. She got the dauphin crowned as Charles VII after the Siege of Orleans. Very good, Mr. Karloff. How about the king who slid down the banister? King who slid down the banister, or Mr. Adams?
That was in the king's breakfast.
It was in the king's breakfast. Could you give us a line
by Alan A. Milne.
Yes. Mr. Kieran, does it come back to you?
Yes. King asked queen and the queen asked the dairymaid, how about some butter for the royal slice of bread?
You haven't got him sliding down the banister yet,
Oh. Yes. Certainly
nobody
the king said. Nobody said as he slid down the banisters,
Nobody, he said, could call me a fussy man.
Something
but
like
I
that.
But I do like a little bit of butter with my bread.
Absolutely. Well, I couldn't stump you on that one, gentlemen. I can quite truthfully say this evening that Lucky Strike has cheerfully paid out no $50 defense bonds and no sets of the encyclopedia. Thanks very largely to the brilliant supplementary efforts of our two monsters this evening, whom, by the way, Lucky Strike wishes to thank, Mr. Karloff, the villainous Mr. Karloff, and the no less villainous Mr. Carradine.
Information, please, on Tuned to Yesterday from February 20th, 1942. Movie stars as guests in that episode. In the same year of the broadcast, Boris Karloff would be in one motion picture, The Boogeyman Will Get You, and John Carradine was in four of them, among them Northwest Rangers and Whispering Ghosts. It's an hour of quiz programs on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. And not to give it away, but we hear a major gaffe by the host of our next broadcast, somewhere within it, Groucho Marx on You Bet Your Life. Stay tuned for a very funny episode from November 2nd, 1949 on NBC.
Ladies and gentlemen, the secret word tonight is shoe. S-H-O-E.
Really?
You bet your life! Elgin American, creator of America's most beautiful compact, smartest cigarette cases, magic action lighters, finest dresser sets, presents Groucho Marx and the Elgin American show, You Bet Your Life, the comedy quiz series produced and transcribed from Hollywood. And here's that sterling Elgin American, the one, the only...
Groucho!
Just a second, I'll see if he's here. Oh, that's me, Groucho Marx. Thank you. Well, here I am again with $3,000 for one of our couples tonight. George Fenneman, who's first to try and take it away from me?
We invited some expectant fathers and some baby nurses to the show tonight.
You did?
And just before we went on the air, the audience selected Mr. Frank Sullivan and Miss Margaret Lindsay. Folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome for Elgin American Compacts. And if you say the secret word at any time we're talking, I'll pay $100 in cash instantly. It's a common word, something you always have with you. A baby nurse and an expectant father, eh? Miss Lindsay, I presume you're the nurse?
I am.
Where are you from, Margaret?
I was born in Johnstown, Pennsylvania.
During the flood?
Before, after the flood.
After
the
flood. Well, a lot of water's gone over the dam since then. If you'll pardon the expression. How long have you been a baby, nurse? I mean, How long have you been a nurse, baby?
About 18 or 20 years.
Mm-hmm. How many babies have you had, Margaret?
Oh, hundreds of them. About 300 a year.
How long have you been married? About 40 years?
I'm not married.
I trust that's the proper explanation for that. You've taken care of 300-400 babies?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Mr. Frank Sullivan, huh?
Yes.
You're an expectant father, huh?
That's right.
What are you expecting?
A baby.
I didn't think you were expecting a kangaroo, Frank. I mean, are you expecting a boy or a girl?
A boy.
A boy, huh? How do you know it'll be a boy? Friends in Washington?
Sooner or later, it'll be a boy.
When is this boy going to arrive, Frank?
Any minute.
Well, what are you doing here? Why aren't you over at the hospital making life miserable for everybody down there?
The doctor told me to get out of there and stop cluttering the place up.
I
asked him if I could come over here and make some money to pay for the baby.
Fine baby. He's not even born yet. Already he's putting the bee on the old man for money. Well, Mr. Sullivan, we have a gift for your wife. You don't deserve anything. She's doing all the work. George, do the honors.
Mrs. Sullivan will truly appreciate Elgin American's beautiful dresser set in jeweler's bronze with a look of gold. Notice that engraved floral design, Mr. Sullivan. You like it?
That's a beautiful thing.
And for our baby nurse, pearls. Elgin American's beautiful pearls. The finest pearls made by man. I'm sure you'll enjoy them.
Lovely.
Now, Miss Lindsay, as a baby nurse, just what do you do?
We take the baby and the mother home and get the formula from the doctor, go home and see that The mother and the baby are taken care of, and...
Who takes care of the father?
Well, if necessary, I would.
You give him his bottle, you mean?
Yes.
Tell me, how long do you take care of the mother and the infant?
Oh, anywhere from 2 weeks to a month, according to Papa's pocketbook.
Mm-hmm. That's a very mercenary attitude, isn't it? Then what do?
Go on to another case.
Well, I guess a job like that calls for a lot of changes, eh, Margaret?
Yes, it does. Mm-hmm.
When are you expecting your next baby, Margaret?
Monday.
Is that so? Congratulations. Mm-hmm. Eh? You're much calmer than the expectant father over here. What kind of work do you do, Mr. Sullivan?
I drive a cab and I sell physiotherapy equipment.
In the cab?
It all depends. If the doctor gets in the cab and I get a chance to sell it to him, I will. But I drive the cab first and then I sell physiotherapy equipment in the afternoon.
Have you had any news yet about the kid?
No.
Well, stick around. Gabriel Heat will be on soon. How long have you been married, Frank?
A little over a year.
How'd you meet your wife?
I met her at Big Bear when I was on leave from the Air Forces. I went to a dance up there.
Oh, were you a pilot?
Yes. She had a ribbon on. She was a beautiful girl.
Just a ribbon? No shoes or anything?
She had shoes and everything on.
What a jerk I am. I had to throw you in the shoes there. Oh, no, that's me this time. I don't get a nickel, huh? Well, you just made yourself $100, Pop. Congratulations. Now, where were we when you threw that shoe at me? So, what happened?
Well, I asked her to dance, and we danced, and then I called her up when
Isn't
I got home.
Is it difficult in her bare feet? How did you meet your husband, Margaret?
I haven't any husband.
Well, are you married?
No.
Well, that explains it, I guess. But why aren't you married, Margaret? You're an attractive girl. Being around babies so much, it seems to me you'd want to get married.
Well, it's this way. All the men I meet are husbands and fathers and...
Well, in your job, you just can't get away from the eternal triangles,
that's
huh?
Right. By the way, they're not triangles anymore.
They're not triangles?
They're squares.
They're squares. Are you referring to the husbands or the diapers?
The diapers.
And all these years, for the past 50 or 100 years, they've been using triangles. Mm-hmm. Huh? Bet some kid figured this out.
I huh? bet they did, too.
At a square dance, I'll bet. Huh? Now, Francis, let's see how much you know about babies. For example, should you pick him up when he cries?
If you pick him up, he'll shut up.
Who wouldn't, huh? That'd spoil him, I suppose, huh, if you picked him up. Huh?
Well, I say so, but I've been reading books and... It says it doesn't spoil them.
Clara Barton, how do you feel about picking up crying babies?
Well, I think it should be done because you never can tell what's the matter if they have a pin sticking them or gas on the stomach or, you know, et cetera.
Well, the et cetera is probably the reason he's crying in the first place. I had gas on the stomach last week. I was at a filling station and the pump fell on me. Miss Lindsay, are you married yet?
Yes.
Well, time's a-wasting, you know. You're liable to wind up an old maid. Bring her in and we'll wind her up together, huh? Well, you've been an interesting couple, and I hope you'll both be very happy. Now, in just 1 minute, you'll get a chance to earn $3,000. All right, now Now you're going to play You Bet Your Life for $3,000. Fenneman, bring our expectant father and the baby nurse up to date on the rules.
Each of our three couples has $20. They bet as much of that $20 as they want on each of four questions. The couple that earns the most money gets a chance at the $3,000 question at the end of the program. Our other two couples are in a waiting room offstage, so they don't know what's happening out here.
What question category did you select?
Songs about New York.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
How much are you going to bet of the $20?
$10. Okay.
Jerry Fielding will supply the music. You identify the song. Okay, Jerry.
Melody of Broadway. Melody Lullaby of Broadway.
Lullaby of Broadway is right.
And they're on their way. They have $30.
All right, you're going for $3,000 tonight. Remember, that's the big prize now. How much of your $30 are you going to try? Talk right up now. Talk
15.
Right up. 15.
I'd rather have 20, but...
Come to some decision between...
20.
Huh?
20.
Has the kid come yet?
Not yet.
All right, $20. What's the title of this New York song?
42nd Street.
42nd Street.
They're really climbing. They have $50 now.
Why are you climbing away up? Here's your third question. You have $50. How much are you going to try?
40.
$40, huh? Play, Jerry.
Give my regards to Broadway.
Broadway. To Broadway.
Now they're up to $90, Groucho.
All right, you've crept up to $90. Now, how much are you going to try this time?
We've decided 80.
Are you married yet, Margaret?
No.
All right. You're going to bet $80. What's the name of this New York song?
The Bowery.
The Bowery is correct.
And they wound up with $170 plus $100 for the secret word.
Thanks and good luck from Elgin American Compact. Stick around now. You're still in the running for the big question.
Groucho, our next couple has been in a waiting room offstage, so they don't know the secret word is shoe. Perhaps they'll say it. Just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected a fix-it man and a housewife. And here they are, Mr. Fred Smith and Mrs. Helen Blair. Meet Groucho Marx.
Folks, we're happy to have you here. And if you say the secret word at any time we're talking, Elgin American Compacts will pay you $100 immediately. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Let's see, a fix-it man and a housewife. Mrs. Helen Blair?
That's right.
How large a family do you have?
I have one child.
One child, huh? And what does your husband do for a living?
He's a fuller brush man.
Front door or back, huh?
Well, I think he'd take either.
Mr. Fred Smith, you're the fix-it man, huh?
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Well, just stand there and fix it. I'll be back to you in a moment. Mrs. Blair, how did you meet your husband?
Well, I was living on a farm. I was the farmer's daughter. And we had been missing our chickens. And so this evening we had our light on.
What do you mean you'd been missing them? You were lonely for them?
No, they'd been disappearing.
Oh.
And,
well, that's quite a difference. You
know. We heard this terrible racket in the chicken house. And just as I got to the door of the chicken house, a skunk came out.
And that was your future husband?
No. I saw this skunk and I yelled, "Get that skunk." And this young boy was coming over to see my brother, and he grabbed for the skunk, and I grabbed for it, and we both fell on it. We smelled to the high heavens. We went back in the house and tried to figure out what to do. But finally, we decided that we should start going out together because nobody else would go with us.
Well, that is certainly an unusual romance, Mrs. Are you the fix-it man, Mr. Smith?
I am.
Now, just what do you fix as a fix-it man, Mr. Smith?
Well, I fix lawnmowers, knives, shears, and electric appliances, and what have you.
Are you married?
Yes and no.
That's the way to be. What do you mean, yes or no? What kind of an answer is that from a...
However, I'm going to marry the same woman that I was married to.
Didn't it take the first time? Why are you remarrying the same girl of your dreams?
Well, I think it's the proper thing to do.
How old are you, Mr. Smith?
71.
You don't look it. You look about 58.
Oh, no.
Yeah? Oh, yeah. Not many fellas get married at 71.
No, they have better sense.
How did you meet your wife, Mr. Smith?
We were kids together.
Well, that's possible, but how'd you meet her, huh?
How'd I meet her? At school. In school.
First time my wife saw me, I was on the cover of Time magazine. She made me get off. It was her magazine. How'd you get to be a fix-it man? Did you start out as a fix-it boy?
No, I used to monkey around when I was a kid.
So did I, but all that got me was trouble, huh? Now, fix-it man, in your job, I presume you run into all sorts of emergencies. What was your biggest mistake?
When I moved to Missouri to live.
You'll get a letter from Kansas City in the morning. Now, Mrs. Blair, when something starts falling apart at the seams around your house, how do you get it repaired?
Well, my husband...
Your husband is falling apart at the seams?
No. He even fixed my... Tonight, he had to fix my shoe before I...
I talk too much. You said shoe, and since that's the secret word tonight, you are now $100 richer.
Oh.
And here you are. Congratulations. Now, don't bother dropping the other shoe. Only the first
Thank
one counts.
Thank you.
Now, let's play You Bet Your Life, the Elgin American game, for $3,000. Run your 20 bucks into more than the other couples, and you get the chance at the big question later. Fenneman's offstage to remind our listeners how much the first couple won. Go ahead, George.
The baby nurse and the expectant father won $170.
Here we go. Let's see how high you can build your $20. What question category did you select?
Name the cloth.
Now, here's your first question. You have $20. How much will you try?
15.
Now, what kind of material is calico made of?
Cotton.
Cotton is correct.
We're off to a good start. They have $35.
Well, you've got a flying start. Remember, you're going for $3,000 tonight. How much of your $35 will you try?
30.
What kind of material is spile? F-A-I-L-L-E.
Silk, and I believe it's made of silk.
Silk is right. You said it, and you win the money.
They're climbing. They have $65.
Now you've got $65, and here's your third question. How much of the $65 are you going to bet?
60.
What kind of material is cretonne made of?
Cretonne. Cotton?
That's right.
They now have $125.
All right, here's your last chance to beat the other couples. You have $125. How much are you going to bet?
50.
What kind of material is cheviot made of?
A flax. Is that right?
I'm sorry. The answer is wool.
They wound up with $75 plus $100 for the secret word.
Thanks and good luck from Elgin American Compact. Now then, we'll soon know who's going to earn the most money and get the chance at the $3,000 question. George, who's leading so far?
Well, the expectant father and the baby nurse are leading with $170. And here's our final couple about to come from their waiting room offstage. They don't know the secret word is shoe. We invited some switchboard operators and some hotel detectives to the show tonight. And just before we went on the air, our studio audience selected operator Matty Weldy and detective Bob Lowe. And here they are, folks, meet Groucho Marx.
Welcome to the Elgin American program. And if you say the secret word at any time we're talking, I'll pay $100 in cash instantly. It's a common word, something you always have with you. Miss Matty Weldy, is that right?
That's right.
You're a switchboard operator?
Yes, I am.
Where are you from, Matty?
I'm from Iceland.
Iceland?
That's right.
Looks pretty hot to be from Iceland.
Don't be too sure.
One can never be too sure, Miss Weldy. Nobody ever seems to be born in Los Angeles. I guess on account of the smog, the stork can't find the chimney. Huh? Where do you do your telephone operating?
I do my telephone operating the Daily News.
Have you ever had your lines tapped?
Not to my knowledge.
Well, keep an eye on Detective Lowe over here. I notice he's looking over your lines right now. Detective Bob Lowe, huh? Mm-hmm. Where are you from?
Cleveland, Ohio.
Mm-hmm. Didn't they used to have a ball club there? Well, tell me, Dick Tracy, at which hostelry... at which hostelry do you do your snoozing? I mean snooping, huh?
I don't do any snoozing and I don't do any snooping.
I beg your pardon. At which hotel are you an eye, ear, and nose specialist?
Why, it's the Country Club Hotel.
You work day or night, sir?
I work the night shift.
I used to wear a night shift. Now I wear pajamas, I tell you. You must have had some embarrassing experiences in your job, haven't you, Mr. Lowe?
Yes,
such
sir.
Such as looking someone straight in the eye through a keyhole?
Well, I don't look through keyholes.
Well, it's my mistake. I thought you looked a little peaked, that's all. Besides, I should have known a man as tall as you is strictly a transom man. Now, tell me, Gimlet Eye, do the guests at your hotel ever steal things like towels, linen, rugs, and mattresses?
Oh, occasionally they take a towel or two, yeah. Mm-hmm.
What do your towels at home say?
They say his and hers.
His and hers. Huh? I can just picture you at home. Huh? Your wife throws the his and her towels in the Bendix washer, and there you are peeking through the little window, watching his chasing hers through the hot soap. Huh? Now tell me, Potted Palm, how do you tell a... How do you spot a crook in your hotel? Do you use a paintbrush? How do you spot him?
Well, when they come in the hotel, well, we look at them, and if they're nervous and sort of shifty-eyed and jittery...
That's me, Groucho Marx! Well, how else can you spot a crook? Say, for example, I was walking through your lobby, and you think there's a chance my suitcase might be filled with silverware. Now, how would you handle it? Go ahead.
Well, I'd walk up to you and ask you, can I help you, sir?
I'd say, yeah, hold this stuff while I go back and get the twin beds. Well, are you going to arrest me or not?
No, I don't think we will, Mr. Mark. You see, we saw you coming in and we recognized you, so we knew that you weren't a crook and that you were honest.
This is the most insulting thing I've heard all day. I'm going to sue you for defamation of character. Well, we're happy to have you two as our guests tonight, and in return, we have some lovely gifts from our sponsor.
For Matty Weldy, this lovely sterling silver compact with 14-karat gold engraving, an Elgin American, of course. Isn't it beautiful?
Thank you so much. Yes, it is beautiful.
And for Mr. Lowe, Elgin American's popular cigarette case with today's smart leather-like look.
Oh, thank you very much.
Now we're going to play You Bet Your Life, and if you can beat our other two couples, you'll get a crack at the $3,000 question. I can't tell you how much they won, but George has gone off stage to remind our listeners.
The baby nurse and the expectant father are still ahead with $170.
Here we go. Let's see how high I can build you $20. What question category did you select?
Movie title roles.
That's right. Now, here's your first question. You've got $20. How much are you going to try?
About 10. I think
$10. Uh-huh. All right. Who plays the title role and I Was a Male War Bride?
Cary Grant.
Cary Grant is correct.
They're on their way, Groucho, with $30.
All right, remember, you're going for $3,000 tonight. How much of your $30 will you try?
20.
All right.
$20? Who plays the title role in the picture? Mr. Soft Touch. The bell is tolled. Well, anyhow, it was Glenn Ford.
Now they have $10.
You have $10 left. How much are you going to bet now?
Better bet the five.
Yes. Okay.
You're going to bet five. Well, who played the title role in The Champion?
Kirk Douglas.
Kirk Douglas is right.
They're on the way again. They have $15.
All right, now you have $15. Here's your last chance to beat the other couples. How much will you bet? How much of the 15?
All.
All? Okay. Who plays the title role in The Fighting Kentuckian?
John Wayne.
John Wayne is right.
And they wind up with a grand total of $30. And that means the expectant father and the baby nurse with $170 get the chance at the $3,000 question. And here's the winning couple, Groucho, the expectant father and the baby nurse.
Well, back again to try for $3,000, eh? Good luck. I'll give you 15 seconds to decide on a single answer between you, so talk it over thoroughly. And no help from the audience, please. Put on your thinking caps. Remember your history. George Washington was the first general to become president. Who was the second general to become president? He was a general in the second war the United States had with England. What is the answer you two have decided upon?
Jackson.
Andrew Jackson is right. Come on, kids. That's right. You win $3,000 in cash. Now you had the right answer, so you win $3,000 from Elgin American Compacts. Now, what are you going to do with all that money? What are you going to do with yours, Francis?
I have to have time to believe it first.
Well, let's say it's true. What are you going to do with that money?
Well, I'd like to put some in the bank for Junior.
Well, you can afford to have triplets now, you know. And Margaret, what are you going to do with yours?
I don't know. I think I'll try to buy a home for my mother and myself. To hold me up.
Well, let's see. You received lovely gifts from Elgin American. You received those lovely gifts from Elgin American, and you won $270 plus $3,000. You really cleaned up tonight. Congratulations to both of you.
Show, You Bet Your Life is a John Goodell production, transcribed from Hollywood, directed by Bob Dwan and Bernie Smith. Music by Jerry Fielding.
You Bet Your Life on Tuned to Yesterday from November 2nd, 1949 on NBC. And that wraps up this hour of quiz shows on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's yesteryear. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levanier. Thanks for listening.